You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
First Nations listeners are advised that the following program may contain the names and voices of our mob who have passed on to the dreaming.
You're listening to Yilliman on 3CR, 855M on your dial, 3cr.org.au. Streamed online and available via the playback service. I just want to start off today's show with a special shout out to Reverend Bill for his kind donation and just for all the assistance he provides to the movement as well. Big shout out to Reverend Bill and thank you for all of your support. It is much, much appreciated. Now today I wanted to have a bit of a quick yarn about an article that I read recently. Now this article was, the title of the article to start off with is A Matter of Precedent. Are all questions of First Nations sovereignty really non-justiciable in Australian courts? Now this article is written by somebody called Olivia Barr and it looks a bit at the co-decision that was made back in the late 70s. Now, if you're a bit unfamiliar with that decision, essentially it was a high court decision around issues of Aboriginal sovereignty and unceded sovereignty. Now, this decision essentially ruled out quite a lot of the potential for First Nations claims to sovereignty to be heard within the Australian court systems, or so it appeared for the last few decades. But this article actually draws that ruling out into question and, looks a bit out. So I'll just give you a brief explainer, I suppose, of what the actual article is about. Pardon me. So, for decades now, Australian courts have repeated this same claim that I just mentioned before about, questions of Aboriginal sovereignty being non-justiciable. Which, essentially means that courts say that these issues sit outside of the authority of the judiciary to decide on. Now, the logic behind this position is tied to the role and function of colonial courts themselves. Australian courts derive their claim to authority from the Crown and from the Constitution. So the courts have generally argued that they cannot question the legitimacy of the Crown sovereignty, because doing so would apparently undermine the very foundation of their own claims to sovereignty and the legal system that they operate within. Now, in other words, it means that the courts have treated sovereignty as a political fact that must simply be accepted rather than something that is actually open to legal examination, or, rather the distinguishment of our sovereignty is, political fact to be accepted. Now, what this article actually points out is that the High Court actually never properly settled this issue through strong binding precedent. Now, the case that people rely on is that 1979 Coe case that I mentioned before. Also, my apologies, I should have said this at the start, but just a cultural advisory warning for any mob that will be listening, that we are going to be mentioning the names of people who have passed away. Now, the 1979 case was brought by Wiradjuri activist and lawyer Paul Coe, who has since passed on to the dreaming. But it was not a full trial, which is, what is really important about this article and about this case. The evidence was never actually properly heard, and sovereignty was never actually deeply examined in the case. What happened was the case ended up dismissing very early over technical procedural issues, and the High Court itself was split evenly in its reasoning. Now, this is a very important part here, and I'll get into this in a second a bit more, but it was an even split. There was four people that were on the High Court, High Court judges, and they had an even split, 2-2. Now, usually when these big matters come before the High Court and they need to make these kinds of decisions, it's are supposed to be done by an uneven amount of High Court judges so that they don't end up with one of these even splits and they end up with a majority decision. And now, this never happened. So, you know, the article also points out that, you know, the courts have also very much tended to collapse all discussions of sovereignty into one interpretation. You know, the idea that recognizing First Nations sovereignty would completely destroy Crown sovereignty and the Australian state. But, you know, of course, sovereignty is much more complex than that. You know, the article also goes into the distinctions between what could be called, you know, absolute sovereignty, for lack of a better term, and a modified or coexisting sovereignty. Now, around the world, you know, in places like Canada and the United States and these other colonies, courts have at times recognized continuing Indigenous sovereignty in limited or shared forms without the state actually collapsing. So, you know, from a sovereign First Nations perspective, it very much exposes this important contradiction that Australian courts have repeatedly claimed sovereignty questions cannot be addressed legally, but they've, you know, despite claiming that, they've very much made legal conclusions about our sovereignty anyways, you know, legal conclusions that do have major implications. But, you know, at the end of the day, the precedent is a lot weaker than previously assumed. And that means that there is actually potential for future legal challenges around stuff like sovereignty and jurisdiction and self-determination and the ongoing status of First Nations law and authority here in so-called Australia. And it's not something that should actually be closed off by the courts, as has been happening for the last, just over 4.5 decades now. So yeah, it really, you know, draws into question the validity of this High Court claim that, you know, our sovereignty is not for discussion within these colonial courts. It turns out that actually, you know, if we are to follow the colonial laws to the letter, then we do have the right to do that. And that was not a proper precedent that was set back in the Coe case, which leaves our discussion of sovereignty back on the table. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, at the end of the day, I'm very wary of these processes. You know, I do not believe that any settler judge is ever going to rule against Australia's interests and, you know, rule that Australia's sovereignty, you know, must cede itself to First Nations sovereignty because it's not legitimate. You know, I don't believe that's ever going to happen. But it just really highlights the processes as well, in my opinion, the fact that these processes are so corrupt and, you know, why we shouldn't trust them. Because, you know, as is evidenced by this case and this article, the courts will turn around and they will, you know, lie or misrepresent or twist things. And they will, you know, give us these false ideas about what we can and what we can't argue within their halls. So yeah, something very notable, in my opinion. You know, at the end of the day though, our sovereignty is something that, you know, we know to be unceded. It is something that we know that still exists, and it's also something that we know we have a right to exercise, and that the impediment to us exercising our rights to sovereignty are the colonial occupation. You know, it is these things like these colonial courts and these other colonial institutions and systems. You know, on that note as well, I was having a yarn about this a bit earlier today with some other mob, and, you know, another thing we were talked about is, another thing that was brought up was the Aboriginal legal services. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, when they first started out, I'm sure that they were quite radical and revolutionary, and, you know, they quite groundbreaking in their existence. But, you know, today, over the many decades, they've slowly been warped and twisted and co-opted and captured. And now today, you know, they're not anything like what they were originally set up with the intentions to be. And now today, in many regards, a lot of these Aboriginal legal services actually help contribute to stuff like our mass incarceration rates. You know, like, first and foremost, the fact that we have the world's highest incarceration rate, and, you know, we're on our own land, and we have these billions of dollars being pumped into these Aboriginal legal services, and we still have these mass incarceration rates, just kind of, in my opinion, points to how ineffective they actually are. But, you know, I'm actually also talking a bit from experience here now. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm sure different Aboriginal legal services, depending on the office or depending on even the state, you know, they operate differently and they might have different policies and practices and protocols and whatever else. But there are, for example, lawyers and, you know, barristers out there that work for the Aboriginal legal service that, for example, will not actually represent mob in criminal cases unless that person is going to plead guilty. You know, never mind the fact of whether they're actually guilty or innocent. You know, a lot of ALS branches or offices, whatever you want to call them, you know, a lot of these lawyers and stuff, they won't take on clients unless the client is actually going to plead guilty and just make the job easy for the ALS lawyer. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely disgusting. These people are meant to be defending us and defending our sovereignty and defending us against genocide and, you know, the occupation and the way that the laws target us. And instead you have, you know, non-Indigenous lawyers working for these services who turn around and tell mob that if you want support, you have to say that you're guilty. And it doesn't matter if they are or aren't guilty. It doesn't matter if they're innocent. You want support, you've got to plead guilty. Otherwise, go and battle your own battles by yourself. You know, what a ridiculous and disgusting state that some of these legal services are in. You know, they really need to come back to community control and, you know, break away from the co-option and capture by the colonial state. You know, whether or not that's actually possible under this current system is another question. It's another debate to be had. You know, this is the positions that we're in here in this colony. And, you know, things like this aren't going to change on their own. You know, things like this only change if enough people get together and do something about it to make it change.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Nice song, that one, by the late Archie Roach, Native Born. Yeah, it's a really good song, that one. I like how he, you know, talks about the destruction of the Australian bushland, or, you know, so-called Australia, the bush and the ecosystems here. You know, it's a major issue that we've been fighting with over the last 250 years of colonisation now, the absolute desecration of our lands here. You know, Australia, as you might be aware if you're a regular listener, Australia has some of the worst stats in the world for, you know, stuff like deforestation and ecosystem destruction and extinction rates, you know, rates of stuff like topsoil erosion and dryland salinity and water contamination, and, you know, the list goes on and on. Australia is one of the worst offenders in the world. And, you know, likewise as well, when we look at stuff like our carbon outputs and, you know, our pollution levels per person, you know, we again have one of the worst per capita rates in the entire world for a lot of these things. You know, something that is a major issue, you know, as Uncle Robbie often talks about, ecocide combined with the genocide of the First Nations people, you know, inevitably results in suicide for everyone. And that's what we're seeing now. You know, we're seeing increased deaths and, you know, increased struggle against stuff like global warming and water and food scarcity and, you know, access to fresh air and fresh water and various services that align with these things. And, you know, for me personally, I think that if you live in so-called Australia, you know, one of the most politically potent things you can do is to get involved in stuff like conservation and land care and bush regeneration and all of these other kinds of things. Because, you know, that's essentially, you know, what we need to be focused on. And at the end of the day, we are heading towards absolute climate collapse and destruction. You know, at the end of the day, quite a lot of the thresholds that we've already passed, you know, we're past the point of no return, really. You know, when we look at a lot of these major pillars of the ecosystem and the climate and the environment, we've, you know, already passed these points of no return where we can't actually get things back to how they were. So now the only thing left to do is to try and conserve what still remains, you know, to do our best to make sure that there's no more animals and plants going extinct, and there's no more destruction of the native environment. There's, you know, no more water being polluted or air being polluted, and no more global warming and whatever else it may be. You know, again, quite a lot of this stuff's already past the point of no return, as I just mentioned, but doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing all that we can to preserve what still remains. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's all well and good to talk about revolution, it's all well and good to talk about the future and how great it's going to be, but what are we fighting for if there's nothing left? You know, it's all well and good to be like, oh, we'll have a revolution in a few years and, you know, things will be great then, but what happens when we get to that point? You know, we may or may not have a successful revolution, but what happens when there's nothing left worth fighting for, nothing left worth saving? Now, what's the point of having a revolution and get rid of capitalism if there's no more food left to eat, no more water left to drink, and no more clean air to breathe? You know, there's no point whatsoever. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the best thing you can be doing is getting involved in conservation work and land care work. On that note as well, there's so many places, especially down here in, you know, so-called Melbourne, there's so many places you can actually get involved in this stuff. There's, you know, so many different friends groups of various creeks, you know, whether it be like Friends of Merri Creek or Darabin Creek or Edwards Lake or, you know, wherever else it may be. And, you know, Friends of different grasslands and reserves and whatever else, you know, all of these community groups that have sprung up to go out and volunteer some time and labor and energy to do what they can to protect the local ecosystems. Go and get involved with them. You know, they're quite active. And in fact, if you really wanted to get involved in this stuff, I was having a look the other day. And, you know, obviously, depending on your transport needs and requirements, whatever else and stuff, but there's actually so much you can be getting involved in. You know, there's essentially working bees every single weekend, as well as a lot of working bees that happen throughout the week at all these various different, you know, creeks and reserves and grasslands and whatever else. You know, go and get involved. Go sign up. Go volunteer your time. And, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, that's okay. Go down anyways, because they'll show you what to do. They'll teach you what to do. They'll teach you what is a weed and what's a native plant and, you know, how to look after it, how to weed the place. And they also run all of these great courses, which is another thing I can't promote enough. You know, the Merri Creek Management Committee and Friends of Merri Creek and likewise the Darabin Creek Management Committee and Friends of Darabin Creek, you know, they run all of these different courses and stuff like, you know, water quality testing and, you know, weeding and, you know, how to build nesting boxes and whatever else it may be. There's so much stuff out there, you know, identifying native plants and, you know, rah, 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 the list goes on and on. You know, go check out their websites, go check out their social medias, go get involved, go do something for your local community to care for country. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about as well. It's an obligation that you have, you know. Now, first and foremost, you know, as an Aboriginal man, I have a lot of obligations to do this. You know, I have cultural and spiritual and kinship obligations to look after and care for country and, you know, totemic obligations to these totem species and all of these other obligations. But these obligations aren't just for First Nations people. They extend to everybody here. You know, if you want to have clean food or water or air, you have an obligation to get involved and to do something to help make sure that happens. You know, if you ever want to have kids or if your siblings want to have kids or, you know, you got grandkids or nieces or nephews or whatever it may be, and, you know, you want a future for them, then you have an obligation to go out and get involved in conservation and land care work. You know, if you benefit from the absolute destruction of this continent, which you do if you live here, you know, especially if you're a settler here, if you reside on this continent, you benefit from the destruction of this continent. You have an obligation to go and offset that benefit, you know, offset the destruction that gives you that benefit. You have an obligation to go and do your part to make things right. You know, everyone's got these obligations. Go fulfill them, you know, go and get involved, go take some ownership of the environment around you and the destruction that's happening around you, and go do something to make things a bit better.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.